Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the People's Square. I'm still waiting on Miriam. I sent her the link, and she should be here any minute. Unless I'm getting stood up again by a girl, then she's not going to come at all. But no, in all seriousness, it's good to be back. We took a couple of weeks off, lots of stuff going on to talk about, obviously. First things first, fascinating Jewish privilege trending on Twitter. Jewish privilege. Oh, hold on a second. Miriam's. Let's see. One second, everyone.
Live tech.
Okay, yeah. Frank, could you just email me the Google Hangouts?
Yeah, it should be over there.
Okay, let me check. All right. Alrighty, yeah. So anyway, so a lot of stuff going on. I could talk a little bit about some reporting that was done this week. Lots of big articles. National Justice is getting a lot of traffic. We broke the story of the censorship at PayPal, how it actually works from the inside. I received screen caps from an insider about this. Someone who knows someone. And you had a lot of interesting things in there, such as the censorship of people for, quote, white advocacy. So this is, okay, Miriam says that she's in. Is she in the conversation, Frank?
She is. I didn't have her coming through. Are you with us?
Miriam.
Hi, guys. Sorry to interrupt.
Hey. No, it's good to be on here with you. So.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes, yes. So did you see today, Miriam, that Jewish privilege is trending on Twitter? Isn't that interesting?
That is very interesting. I did not know that, actually.
Yes, if you go right now, you check hashtag Jewish privilege, there's about 55,000 tweets about it. They're very upset. Of course, whenever someone asks them about their privilege, like, the point I would make is, when Sarah Silverman can wear blackface and not get canceled, Bill Maher can say the so-called N-word, not get canceled, Epstein and Weinstein and Woody Allen and various other individuals, Roman Polanski, can actually go around raping children, and either they don't get in trouble for it or it takes a long time to prosecute them and they get a slap on the wrist. So what is this then? Okay, why is it that if you're Jewish, you can do that, and if I go out there and I say, hey, why can Jewish people do this? Why is there a double standard? I get canceled, right? Well, that is Jewish privilege. That's the definition
of it. I actually noticed, I looked up all of the people that did the blackface, and it turned out that most of them were Jewish. And if you remember the voice of Apu in The Simpsons, how he quit because he no longer wanted to voice like an Indian, he was
Hank Azaria,
also Jewish.
Yeah. Yes.
So it seems to be a trend that all of this blackface is actually coming from, like, Jewish-owned Hollywood.
Well, this is the thing, Miriam. You know, I know you're in Australia. I remember many years ago looking at the Zionist Organization of Australia, and they were out there talking about, get this, Aboriginal rights, talking about the oppression of the Aboriginal. And I look at that, and I'm like, you know, say what you want about what happened to the Aboriginals, but the Aboriginals are much better off now than before compared to the Palestinians after being engaged with by the Zionists. So doesn't that take some nerve to be part of a group called the Zionist Organization of America and talk about Aboriginal rights in Australia?
It's such a double standard. It's a double standard that is a feature of them in pretty much everything that they do. You know, an ethno state for us, but not for you. Borders for us, but not for you. Although Israel right. never declared its borders. But they here in Australia, Aboriginals have the right to vote. They have citizenship rights. And say what you want about what happened afterwards. As you said, right now, they're way better off than Palestinians, which they're still being, Palestinians are in the process of being ethnically cleansed. So it's complete hypocrisy. But the people running this, you know, if you've ever heard of the organization Move On in the States, we have a similar organization here called Get Up. And it was created by an Ashkenazi Jewish man who was friends with George Soros, and he got all of his money to create it from George Soros.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's quite interesting. You know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about on the show today was the role of these Jewish organizations, which always deck themselves in bright colors, act like they're disciples of human rights, like they are there, they fight for universal humanity and things like that. But then you look at some of their internal documents, their internal memos, and how they really see the world. I mean, the most infamous example is something I wrote about on National Justice, which was a leak of an Anti-Defamation League memo. And it's all about the coming annexation of the West Bank. And in public, the ADL, possibly the most powerful Zionist organization in America, in public, they are actually critical of the West Bank annexation. And yet in private, they go through all of these different points of how they will deal with this, in the sense of what they say is, in public, we will essentially work with J Street, Bend the Arc, and NY Jewish Agenda to feign opposition to the annexation of the West Bank. But in private, we will work with AIPAC on policy so that Israel can achieve all of its strategic objectives in the West Bank. So they have a public position and a private position. And their biggest fear is that supporting the Israelis in the annexation of the West Bank will alienate some of their non-white coalition partners.
I think that it's the only pushback against annexation is by the faction of the Zionists that fear that it's going to result in a one-state solution, and they're not going to be able to pull it off and keep a Jewish state. So, and I have no doubt that for others, it's just optics, and how can they best sell this and not appear to be the violent, genocidal maniacs that they are. And it's interesting, like, if you observe these so-called liberal left organizations like Move On and Get Up specifically because it's in Australia, their position on the West Bank annexation, and Avaz as well, Avaz is a very important one, is that they're against the West Bank annexation. But the most that they'll ever suggest is BDS, which is a non-violent means of resistance.
Yes.
But when it comes to Iran or Syria or any of Israel's strategic enemies, they're all about violent overthrow and revolution and going in there and causing issues. So it's blatantly obvious. Like, there's a lot of people that buy into this, but if you just look at it, just take a step back and look at it rationally, it's obvious that they are just part of Israel. It doesn't matter if they pretend to be pro-Palestinian or not.
Yeah, and you know what else is funny is the idea that Syria is somehow, like, their justification for supporting coups in Syria and terrorists in Syria is that it's not democratic. But, you know, not long ago, I was looking at the Syrian parliament. There's more ideological diversity in the Syrian parliament than there is in any Western country. In Syria, they have a Nazi party, they have a communist party, they have a regular nationalist party, they have every possible way of looking at the world represented in their parliament. In most of the West, if you have half of those ideas, you go to prison, okay? Or worse, in America, you don't go in prison in America, but you do lose your job, you become blacklisted. You know, the whole thing about cancel culture that people are talking about right now, that's not cancel culture. It's just political censorship. And the people that are behind this are these Zionist groups. This has been proven. I have the leaks on National Justice. Look up the PayPal leaks. The Anti-Defamation League works with the FBI, Civil Rights Division, to identify accounts of political dissent and they name the names. These are not people that promote terrorism. These are just people that dissent. It's the Proud Boys. It's Stefan Molyneux. It's Katie Hopkins. And it's Gemma O'Doherty in Ireland. And in her description, it just says Irish journalist who's anti-immigration, anti-LGBT. Wait, who's talking?
Oh.
Was that you? Or?
No, not me. But listening. I did hear the Zoom call that you guys released with the Zionists talking about how they're going to strategize controlling speech. And I have lots to say about that as well. And I wanted to touch on the Syrian Nazi Party, the SNP. that's the one that they hate the most, I think, of all of the parties in Syria, for obvious reasons. But that's the one that would be the most ideologically aligned with other nationalist groups around the world. And, before we get into everything, I did want to just go back and talk about the Black Lives Matter and the uprising and all of this stuff that's happening in the U.S. and relate it back to Syria, if that's okay with you guys.
Yeah, please do.
Well, if you guys have been watching me on Twitter, I have a different strategy to deal with this because I understand that, from the Zoom call as well, and also have you heard of The Lobby, the Al Jazeera documentary?
Oh yes, me and Mike Enoch did a whole show on it. Actually, it's quite shocking. Yeah.
Yes. So there was a part of that the Zionists actually called Qatar and asked them to specifically not include the documentary and censor, and the Qataris complied because Qatar is the one that runs Al Jazeera. But that element of it was actually leaked out by this group called the Gray Zone, which are like tanky Jewish Ashkenazis.
Yes, I know.
So, yeah.
They do good journalism here and there, though. I mean, they cover the foreign policy very well. I have to give it to them. Max Blumenthal is one of those rare, honest Jews. Yes.
Well, Max is the nicest one of them, I think.
Yeah,
even though his dad is a Clinton person, but he's a good guy, I think.
Yeah, he's a decent journalist. I mean, you just got to give it to him regardless of whatever. But, anyway, continue.
They do useful stuff. So they somehow they got a hold of this thing. And what was on it is about Black Lives Matter. That was the thing that they found most dangerous of the whole Lobby documentary that they insisted the Qataris censor. And you guys should watch it. It's on my channel. I clipped that clip of it. And basically, they're strategizing in their secret meeting, and they're saying, well, Black Lives Matter is actually very, very useful, and it's very important to us. We just have to find a way to temper it and make sure that it doesn't go into a anti-Israel position. And then they also discussed about the fact that when in the past, when Black Lives Matter did stand for a anti-Israel position, they shut down their events, basically. And they were proud how they shut down a Black Lives Matter event. Imagine if they did it in this climate,
Yes.
But recently they did. They recently, Black Lives Matter UK, the Twitter account, I don't know if you saw, but after they tweeted some stuff against Israel, BBC banned Black Lives Matter badges from appearing on their show.
Wow.
So
I have seen, it seems from my gathering of reporting on this, to be perfectly objective, there are two factions in Black Lives Matter. They have one faction that is completely in the pocket of the Jews that the ADL essentially controls indirectly, that the ADL wants to cement its power over. And then there's another faction of black radicals that basically hate Israel and see it as an occupying state. They're consistent. Doesn't mean I agree with what they think about white people, but that faction of Black Lives Matter is consistent, right? And then, of course, you have the periphery of that faction, which is Louis Farrakhan, who recently called the leader of the ADL Satan, which I agree 100% with. And, so it's very clear, though, that you saw elements of the anti-Zionist element in Black Lives Matter gets attacked by the system and canceled even. We saw the football player who said something about the Zionists recently and he was shut down. He had to apologize. But then there's that other faction led by DeRay, what's his name, DeRay McKeeson, who was recently out there saying, oh, don't be anti-Semitic, you're being anti-Semitic. It's very clear that guy is being paid, right?
Yes.
But anyway, continue.
Yes. Well, you saw what happened with Ice Cube. That was a really interesting.
Yeah, that guy too. Well, he's kind of like always been Nation of Islam adjacent, and he was attacking white people, but as soon as he says something about Jews, as kooky as it may have been, everyone came after him, right? So
yes, they did. And that's one of the things that, so as you said, they had one guy come out and say, stop being anti-Semitic. And I listened into your show and you said, never apologize. I agree with that. Never apologize. Unless you've done something really wrong, then yeah, okay. But and you made it like an error, like a factual error. Sure, you can apologize for that. But when it comes to factual things, if you apologize, they're not going to stop coming for you. So don't. And yeah, so they got this guy to say, stop being anti-Semitic, blah, blah, blah. In the lobby leak, they actually said that it's very important to have, they said that they were talking to the heads of the black community. And one of the important tools in their arsenal was Martin Luther King. And the speechwriter, they got the speechwriter who wrote I Have a Dream for Martin Luther King to write three articles in the one of those, not the Guardian, the other one, I forget, doesn't matter, one of those liberal newspapers, about how the Jews and the blacks of America have a great history of fighting for civil rights with each other, etc., etc. And so they are they were saying basically they're controlling the narrative of Black Lives Matter by using these very important tools for the connection they have with blacks in America, which is Martin Luther King. So I thought, well, if that's the case, because my whole thing at the beginning of this is they're afraid of Black Lives Matter turning, like going loose. Because when it comes to Antifa, there's no way it can go against them. Like there's elements that it's anti-Israeli, but it's almost like 99% under their control. Antifa, there's nothing in there that you can turn or help with. Black Lives Matter, there's still some potential for turning the sword back onto them, as we can see now with the Jewish privilege thing trending. So, So I thought, okay, well, let's push it a little bit more into that direction. So I said, well, if you guys don't like statues and you say you don't like Zionism, Martin Luther King made some very, very pro-Israel comments, and I listed them, and I said, it's time to take down his statue and replace it with a statue of Malcolm X. Why doesn't Malcolm X have any statues? And the Zionists went insane. Like, I had comments from the Israeli U.S., the U.S. Consular General for Israel, the spokesman for the IDF, the U.N. human rights lawyer for Israel. So all of these, so they were raging, and because my tweet got 1,000 likes, and some black people were like, because he was a rapist as well, apparently. So there's another element.
Well, that's another thing. So if you want a cancelable offense, Martin Luther King is guilty of many, from selling out to raping people. I mean, he's on tape. You realize, I believe in the next year or two, they're actually going to release the tapes. They actually, when the tapes were recorded, they sealed them until the year, I believe, 2022 or 2025. So those are coming out soon, and you're going to hear that that voice that we in America have been hearing since we were little kids indoctrinated with, I have a dream. You're going to hear that voice with, rape that white bitch. You're going to hear that in the FBI.
He's kidding me.
You're going to hear him.
Worse than anything.
You're
going to
hear
Trump
that voice. And that's going to be devastating, not just for the narrative of liberalism. It's going to be devastating for the concept, the almost religious. The two religions of America are the Holocaust and Martin Luther King, and one of those religions will be devastated when these tapes are released. I mean, they have to figure out something to extend the release date or something. But yeah, this will be a big problem.
I heard it was 2027, so they might have enough time to do their damage before it gets out.
I mean, I don't really see, you know, from an American perspective, I don't really see much defense of or even much talk of Martin Luther King. The only people in America that still defer to Martin Luther King are conservatives, believe it or not. Leftists seem to have kind of fallen out of favor when it comes to Martin Luther King. Now, it's not for the same reasons I would, but they seem to believe that Martin Luther King was either not enough or that his message that is ostensibly about racial equality is wrong, actually. They don't want that anymore. They don't want equality of merit. They want equality of outcome. And the only way to do that is to take, you know, to oppress white people in their eyes. And so that's kind of where we're at in America right now. I mean, Miriam, you would not believe how crazy America is in this time and place in history. I mean, they go, you know, white people are being killed in the street. There was some girl, a mother, who was shot to death because she said all lives matter, and they shot her to death. Some black extremists shot her to death. There's another.
It's not
case.
A civil war. I understand. Yeah. We've been through our own in Syria.
Oh yeah,
and
it's very much like Syria, actually, including with a fake army, with a fake terrorist army. Including with support from the U.S. government, because the U.S. government right now refuses to police the streets, refuses to stop them, refuses to side with the normal white citizen. The U.S. government is letting it happen. In fact, if you oppose them in any meaningful way, the U.S. government will come after you. So this is clearly a kind of internal state-led revolt of the elites that is using these elements, including, because, you know, Miriam, even though it's called Black Lives Matter, in a lot of these cities, the people that are doing this stuff are white and Jewish. They're white and Jewish liberals.
Yeah. It's the Antifa.
Yes, they're anarchists. They're anarchists and kind of bourgeois bohemians and so on. And those people have a class interest, and in the case of the Jews, a racial interest in browbeating white people. So
that so they're using black people as a sword against you. That's the whole objective.
Right. Like the black people that do come out, the majority of them, are just going out to loot and maybe steal things, may break something, may hurt someone. But the people that are trying to give this an ideological direction, a trajectory, are by and large white and Jewish. And I think that's an interesting dynamic because obviously those people, like Malcolm X,
they have to
said,
hide behind something, right? So they have to hide behind black people when it comes to America. And in Syria, they actually hid behind Al-Qaeda. So, you know, it doesn't matter what Al-Qaeda thinks about Israel or Jews, but they're happy to use these tools. They don't care. They don't think it's going to turn on them.
Well, the thing with black people is what Malcolm X said. Malcolm X said that white liberals, and he's talking about Jews as well, white liberals like to pretend to be friends of Negroes, that's his words, in order to win power for themselves. So they use blacks to build their own power. And I find that to be absolute truth, because if you look at how these people live in their private lives, these urban, upper-class, bourgeois bohemians, these people, don't send their kids to school with black people. They don't live in the exact communities as black people. They don't even have any black friends. The joke I always make is, you know, I used to know some Klan guys in Mississippi back in the day, and every one of them had a black friend. And they'd be like, yeah, I got this black friend. He's a good boy. He likes to play jazz music. And, you know, so a member of the Ku Klux Klan in Mississippi is more likely to socialize and have black friends than most white liberals. So that kind of stuff is kind of what checkers their view, which also shows one thing, is that they're not motivated by black dignity or black rights or anything. They're motivated by anti-whiteness. They hate white people. They don't love blacks. They hate whites. And I think that's the important thing to understand here. Okay, because black people are actually worse off today than they were years ago, and that's in every possible metric when
and
it comes
to
life expectancy.
They prefer to keep it that way.
Well, yeah. Well, black people are pretty aimless right now. I mean, think of it. Someone brought this up before. Black people don't have any leaders anymore. Have you noticed that? Like, who is the leader? Who do I go to have a conversation with the black community?
Is it Ilhan Omar? I don't think so.
Yeah, but even Ilhan Omar, she's not really a black leader. The closest thing they have is Farrakhan, and he's not allowed. Remember, yes. Fox Soul. They have Fox has a channel for black people called Fox Soul, and they're going to play Louis Farrakhan's speech live, his great speech on the 4th of July. And get this, the ADL made a phone call and got it canceled. They wouldn't play it. So, yeah, they were really upset about that.
They're only allowed to worship Obama, which was a tool of Israel. So that's the thing. So another, like, attacking Martin Luther King is a good one. Attacking Obama is a great one. Attacking Yale University is also a good strategy because it's named after the guy who, like, not just a slaver, but not even just a slave trader, but the CEO of the West India Trading Company, which is like the head of the slave traders. So, but they're never going to change the name of it. The direction of the crowd is never at that. And
well, notice that, right? Why? So this goes to show you again. Look at the inconsistency with Yale. You know, I mean, they were burning down statues of Catholic saints in California, of all these great heroes, of writers, and they even attacked Cervantes' statue. He wrote Don Quixote, beautiful book, great Western literary figure. So they attack all these statues, but when it comes to Yale, all these overeducated Ivy League pussies and fags, they refuse to rename the school because that would take away the prestigious name. Okay, they love to go out there and say, I went to Yale. I went to Yale Law School. And again, who goes to these schools, right? Who goes to Yale and depends on the prestige of the Yale name to win opportunities? It's Jews. Because 30% of Yale student body, I don't know if you knew this, between 25 and 30% of their student body is Jewish. They're 2% of the population. So if you take the name away, Yale, Harvard, all these Ivy League schools, and you change their names, suddenly when you name drop your alma mater, no one will know what the hell you're talking about, and you're less likely to get a prestigious job. So funny how that works, right?
Isn't it? So yeah, they're not going to budge on changing it, no matter how much pressure they get. And they control the narrative, so they're not going to get the leaders of this so-called Black Lives Matter movement to... By the way, the Black Lives Matter, if you look at the founding members, one of them is... a African-American lady whose dad is Ashkenazi Jewish. Well, it's her stepfather, but nevertheless.
Yes, Garza. So, I know who that is.
Yes, I mean, she's... I don't know how problematic she is, but otherwise, she's not directing them into that direction. So when it comes to, like, the civil war you guys are experiencing over there, or it's kind of textbook, because... It's almost like these guys have a playbook and they only know how to, like, it works, so why change it? So when in Syria, we had looting. They looted people's houses. They looted factories. They looted the equipment that makes the products, not just the products. And they shipped off the factories and sold them to Turkey. They looted ancient artifacts, like they dug them up from under the ground and they sold them. And they're probably in some... you know, museum in New York, or recently the head of the Louvre was arrested because he was trading in Syrian stolen artifacts. And they also had statues, of course. They had ISIS destroying all the historical monuments, including the Temple of Baal. Like, no matter what you think of Baal, he was part of Syrian history.
Yeah.
And
it amazing how it follows genocide. The same pattern? Yeah.
Yes, because it's cultural genocide. It's destroying not just the people, but the entire history that they base their identity on.
Well, first they burn the effigy, then they burn the people. I mean, that's the lesson that we get from this stuff. And you know that this Black Lives Matter thing, to the at least the liberal element of it, is being directed by the United States elite. Because it follows the same pattern as ISIS and other organizations that the United States elite was supporting in Syria. You see, like you said, the destruction of art, of history, of heritage. You see also that, you know, these are the elements, the kind of negative or culture-destroying elements of a society. Any place you go in the world, the United States is supporting them. So, for example, in Sudan, we always hear about the Sudanese genocide. Well, America is actually responsible for a lot of the tension of turning the blacks against the Arabs in Sudan by trying to create a new country called South Sudan. And the reason they were doing that is because the Palestinians were getting arms through Sudan. So the United States created a civil war there. And then they called the Arabs that were fighting back, they called them genocidal. Then you go to China and you have this sophisticated, you know, advanced industrial power. And who does the United States support? They support some of the Uyghurs, not all of them, but many of them are in ISIS. And they stab little kids. And the Chinese government took measures. Again, Islam is not illegal in China. They have Muslims that are part of the Chinese culture, that are part of the Communist Party even. And yet America is going out there saying, leave those Uyghurs alone! Even though all they're doing is...
We care about Islam. Like those Uyghurs, we have 10,000 Uyghur terrorists in Syria. That's why they support them. But China was trying to crack down on them being shipped off to Syria to join Al Qaeda. And that, you know, obviously that's a problem for the United States. And also it's a good tool against China. Not saying that China is a interesting case because the Zionist lobby is really trying to ingratiate itself in there. And they're adopting little Chinese girls and raising them to be Ashkenazi Jewish in culture. So they have a plan for that we should discuss some other time. But when it comes to... When it comes to Antifa, like, again, the playbook, because I don't know, if you guys have heard this, if you've seen my stuff, I apologize for being repetitive, but when it comes to the Antifa, that is obviously the history of Antifa was created as a militia arm of the Communist Party in Nazi Germany, and of course we know who ran that, but in Syria, a lot of them from Europe and from the United States, they came to fight alongside the Kurds to create an autonomous zone.
And a lot of those guys, I can tell you straight up, I don't have the evidence for it, but I guarantee some of those people that went to fight in Syria, they got their military training and sabotage training, and they're using it in the riots in America right now. Guarantee it.
I guarantee it, yes. And a lot of the, you know, in the Chaz Autonomous Zone, with all those shootings and all the gun running, I would be surprised if at least some of those people, probably the leaders that people look toward for guidance, came from Syria. Because if you looked at the Chaz, I actually typed up on Twitter, I put Chaz and then I put Rojava, and it's them. Yeah. They're like idealizing all of these people that went and fought and died for Rojava in Syria, and where did they get that from? You know, it has nothing to do with the United States.
Well, they have a connection there. Yeah, there is definitely a connection. And what's so remarkable is imagine being an anarchist communist and openly knowing that the CIA is leading your fake revolution in Rojava and still doing it. Like, no self-awareness, no nothing.
Zero.
You also see that the anti-war left has been overtaken by these people and is no longer anti-war. Now, they were complaining. I remember Antifa members were complaining when Donald Trump pulled troops out of the Kurdish region in Syria, supposedly.
Yes.
And they were whining about that like crazy. They're like, no, that's the end of Rojava. So they understand on some level that they can't exist and their stupid ideas can't go anywhere without the CIA supporting it.
Just like the one in Seattle, like they couldn't have existed without the mayor backing them. And once she pulled her support, they were gone within a day. Like they collapsed in on themselves. What kind of a revolution is that? What a joke.
Right. I mean, these people, again, remember, these anarchists, anarchism has always been a novelty of the rich. So, for example, you take Peter Kropotkin, right? He's one of the most influential anarchist thinkers. They have a long heritage of this, Miriam, because Peter Kropotkin supported World War I, okay? Now, there's an argument to be had for supporting this, but the point is, he was an anarchist communist, and he was a supporter of the First World War. He signed a statement supporting it. Second, the guy was also essentially, he was a prince. He was born as an aristocrat. And so this kind of maximalism of individualism is very much a symptom or a trait of a rich, spoiled brat who has never had to suffer consequences in the real world, and they assume this is how the world should be structured. All they know is that there are these barriers to what they want to do, which is, you know, gay stuff. It's they want to steal things, they want to break things, they want to throw temper tantrums, and they see that the police in some cases might try to stop them, and that's kind of what motivates them in their crusade. So the point is these people are closely affiliated with power. I mean, they're the sons and daughters. We saw the mayor of New York City, his daughter was arrested rioting, right? We see this with the son of Tim Kaine, the senator, who was a vice presidential candidate. His son was arrested as an Antifa. I have actually exposed many Antifa organizers and leaders. One of them was the son of a judge, the grandson of a judge and the nephew of a politician. Another one is a PhD, Jared Shanahan. He's the one that actually doxed a lot of people. I know. I found out who he was. He's a PhD at a university. He just sits around coming up with nonsense theories, sociological bullshit, and so on, right? These are the sons and daughters of the elite. And
well, the leaders are simply
pushing society where they want their parents to, where their parents want them to go. Anyway, continue.
Well, I agree with you. I would say that a lot of people are duped into following it and don't really understand the ideology or anything behind it. They're just angry and they want to do something. They're probably not rich. That's as far as I can see. Those are the cannon fodder. But what's interesting is, like, Black Lives Matter UK, the one that's under fire for tweeting that stuff, anti-Israel, pro-Palestine stuff. In 2018, they were tweeting how people need to defend Rojava. they need to pay attention to Rojava because Trump's going to abandon the Kurds. Now, why are Antifa interested in the Kurds? It all comes down to this guy called Murray Bookchin, who is like the ideologue of modern day anarchy and Antifa. He's actually, so the head of the Kurds are an anarcho-Marxist. Not the Kurds, but the YPG, the SDF, the ones that the US are backing, the PKK, they're anarcho-Marxist. And the guy, Ocalan, their leader, who is on the terrorist list of the United States, he was good friends with Murray Bookchin, actually. He got his ideology.
Based his ideology on it, yeah.
Yes, so Murray Bookchin went and he evangelized to him. And they shared a common goal, which is their hatred of Arabs or Arab speakers. And of course, Murray Bookchin was a Zionist, like openly a Zionist. So these
Antifa are like a mixture of anarchism and Trotskyism, Bookchin. I could be mixing him up with Schachtman. It was those who are the main people that support that the Kurds are inspired by. It was Schachtman, Max Schachtman, and Bookchin, both of them Jews, both of them Zionists. Both of them ultra.
And a sprinkle of environmentalism just to rope in the greenies.
Yes.
They call it the ecology of freedom. That's why they were planting those stupid little vegetable gardens, because they wanted to be part of the ecology of freedom. Right now, the SDF in Syria or the YPG are setting fire to wheat fields and starving the rest of the country. But anyway, all about environmentalism. So they followed Bookchin, the SDF, the anarchists, basically the Antifa in Syria, the US is backing, they follow Bookchin. And the whole thing is, again, like when I say they have the template that they follow, so they did that in Syria, they're doing it to the United States. But this template has existed even before that, because the entirety of Israel was built on this anarcho-syndicalism ideology. And they had, in 1914, 1918, they had these anarchists from East Europe come in and settle in kibbutz in Palestine and built these kibbutz autonomous zones. And then they proudly, like, I have papers and books about these anarchists. One of them was a Trotskyist that wrote about how they kicked out all the Arabs from the area and they could have their kibbutz.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Just like the Kurds.
Yeah, you know, I think his grandson is an Israeli settler right now. Leon Trotsky's grandson.
Wow.
He's in Israel. Yeah.
Wow. That is amazing. I had no idea about that. Yeah. I'm going to have to look that up. But look it up. Noam Chomsky and Bernie Sanders were both like...
Trotsky with Chomsky, the T. His grandson, not Chomsky.
Yes. Yes. I definitely looked it up. But Chomsky, Noam Chomsky, was part of the kibbutz movement. So was Bernie Sanders. And what did Noam Chomsky do when Trump said he was going to pull out of Syria? He said, no, don't abandon the Kurds. You have to keep the U.S. military in. Like, this is a so-called anti-imperialist. Just when it comes to actually doing something that opposes Israeli hegemony, he stands against it. And the Chomsky is, like, idolized by those Antifa in the chop. So it's the same group of people, and it's so ridiculous how they sell out these ideologies as anarchist, like people have autonomy and it's not racist at all. Like everybody's going to be equal and it's going to be democratic, and then it ends up being genocide and ethnic cleansing. Because
all the cities that the Kurds were able to get in charge of, they just expelled all the Arabs from them. Like that's what
I've been hearing. Assyrian Christians as well. Like the Assyrian Christians are getting basically ethnically cleansed in not just Syria but Iraq by the Kurdish. They used ISIS a lot. They forcibly disarmed them, and then they pulled out and they let ISIS slaughter them. So, but even in the Chaz, they had like a black only zone.
Right. Oh no! The whole anti-racism thing is just a way again to browbeat white people or just majorities in general, as we see in Syria. They browbeat the Arabs there because the Jewish strategy is that the majority of any host nation needs to be constantly under siege for them to be able to exercise power. Because if the majority is on the defensive, then Jews can run the show. And when it comes to the Kurds, I mean, the Israelis have actual leaked documents, and it's part of their public policy to weaponize Kurdish grievances in order to create a conflict in these countries, particularly Syria. They love to use the Kurds in Syria, in Iraq, places like that. They love to use the Kurds to cause problems, and that is specifically Israeli intelligence doing that. I mean, let's be honest, they used to use Arab Christians like that, like in Lebanon, right? Back when they are
Catholic. So the ones in Lebanon, so in Lebanon it's not just one kind of Christians. There's the Orthodox and there's the Catholics, which are called Maronites. And it's the Orthodox are 100% on our side. Like the SSNP, the Syrian Nazi Party, was created by a Lebanese Orthodox Christian. He wants greater Syria.
I was talking about the Maronites.
Yeah, the Catholics. Because the Catholic Church is, it's not the
The Catholic Church is right now firmly in the pocket of Washington. And that's that reflected on the Maronites, who, by the way, later on were stabbed in the back. That's what people believe. But they were using the Maronites as a kind of proxy weapon in Lebanon. That kind of shows you how the Jews are willing to use any fault line, any crack in a society, potential cleft in a society, to expand that in order to create conflict. Remember, Jews, they thrive in class struggle. And I'm not just talking about working class or economic class. Class struggle in the sense of classes of society in conflict. And the worst thing Jews believe could happen to them is for all these different classes to be reconciled, whether through separation or autonomy or a kind of confederation or whatever. They are always there to piss fuel on the fire, whether it's in Lebanon, whether it's in America, whether it's in Australia, wherever they are. They are actively spending all of their time creating internal conflicts. You know, that's kind of what their MO seems
that's
to be.
That's what they do. And it's their modus operandi, even in the US. And I think they have this idea that first we have to destroy before we can create. So the anarchism is like a destructive energy. and out of that comes something different. Like out of the so-called democratic anarchist like haven for both Arabs and Jews will live in harmony that what Israel was sold on, out of that comes like the basically the Jewish ISIS. And
right. That's the Marxist theory, actually. The Marxist theory is to create anarchy and use that to build a new idea, a new society, and so on, to create revolution. But what's interesting about this is that it's almost like they put lightning in a bag, right? And they open the bag in a controlled environment to ensure that it only happens within a certain paradigm. But in some cases, like you were saying, though, because these are irregular armies, they can turn against them too. And that's something, by the way, that I have proof that they're afraid of, because I have the Anti-Defamation League's internal memos that I published on National Justice, where they talk about this. They say we can't lose control of Black Lives Matter, because you know what their big fear is, Miriam, is that. A lot of these politicians that are kind of these like leftist people of color politicians like Ilhan Omar, AOC and Rashida Tlaib, they're afraid that if Israel annexes the West Bank, they will be pressured to criticize Israel and that this will completely destroy the entire process of controlling Black Lives Matter, controlling the left as Zionists, even if they're Zionists in secret. And they have a whole plan to do it, by the way. They have like a fake letter that they're circulating in Congress that was signed by Ted Deutch and Jan Schakowsky, where they talk about a kind of fake, and the ADL says this is a fake criticism of Israel that is intended to be weak and feckless. They say this, and they're circulating this letter, and what they say here, and I'll quote them, it says, "We want to collect signatures on this letter to, quote, discourage the far left from signing something more extreme on the annexation issue." So this coming Israeli annexation is something that they believe, and they said this, could be the equivalent of a million George Floyds in the Middle East. That's what they're saying.
Wow.
So they are afraid of this. They are afraid, which is why when they do annex the West Bank, we're going to make sure to point to them, and we're going to make sure that everyone knows that they're behind this, and that secretly they might publicly signal against it, but secretly they admit that they're working with AIPAC to actually get this policy through without any pushback from the U.S. government.
Sure. I think that the greatest fear is the death of the two-state solution, because then the only other then it's going to be a dichotomy between a one-state solution and just total genocide, and it's going to be hard to defend the latter. And they don't want to stand for the former, because then that would have, they would have to accept that, like, they don't want, they can't have their Jewish state. So that they want to save the idea of a two-state solution without actually ever getting there. I wanted to address, like, some of the people in the comments are saying they're Catholic. I'm not saying anything against Catholics. I'm just saying, and someone who was like, "I'm a Catholic from Lebanon." I'm not saying that it's all Catholics in Lebanon. I'm just saying that the element of people who stood with Israel came from that group of people in Lebanon. Just to be clear,
I mean, Miriam, you're a Sunni Muslim, if I recall correctly. That doesn't stop you from attacking ISIS, you know. I mean, this is people taking personal offense at that are just ridiculous. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about all Catholics. I'm a born and raised Catholic, and I can criticize these little groups like the Maronites too, you know, in the way they behaved in Lebanon. In fact, a lot of people in the United States, when Israel attacked Lebanon, it was largely Muslims that they were killing, but also Christians. You know, a lot of conservatives in the United States, like Joe Sobran, actually sided with the Lebanese against the Israelis. So, you know, the Maronites took the wrong side in that conflict, just to say that, you know.
Exactly. So another person said, "Why?" Like on Twitter, when it all began, I took a... For me, when I think about these things, I think strategically. Because I know that this is where this thing is going to go eventually. But at the beginning, there was potential at least to try and get people's ear and to drive it in a certain specific direction. So they asked why I talked about cops killing black people on Twitter, for example. I didn't say it was specifically black people. I said it was cops killing people in general. And compared to Australia, in the United States, cops are more trigger happy. But the, I then said, well, the reason for that is they're trained by Israel. Now you have to think.
Yeah, no, there is an element of truth to that. I mean, there's a story about a young man in Maryland who got a no-knock raid from his local, I believe it's in Montgomery County. It was a young white man, no criminal record, nothing. He just had a picture of himself with a gun on Instagram. The police did a no-knock raid, which is when they show up unexpected to your house at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they shot him in his bed. They shot him in his bed. His family is suing the state, but it later came out that the Montgomery County police were trained by the IDF in counterinsurgency tactics. So, on the one hand, this is the amazing aspect about America, is that on the one hand, you know, the groups that are complaining about police brutality are exaggerating, and it's not really racial. Blacks are actually less likely to be shot by a white police officer than white people are. That's been proven by various studies. But on the other hand, we do have extremely vicious police because they're trained by the IDF in the ADL's exchange programs. I think the critics call it the deadly exchange, right? Where they teach them all these strategies that are not intended to police Americans with constitutional rights. They're intended to police Palestinians in occupied territories. And they're teaching that shit to our police departments. I mean, it is crazy. Yes. No, you're totally right about that.
Yeah, so they basically see you all as, like, occupied insurgents, basically. That's how they're taught to see, as everyone is a potential threat. Right. So, of course, I'm going to point that out and stand against it. And why would I defend that? Think about it strategically. And this is when it comes to talking about strategy, because at the end of the day, we're all under attack. When it comes to Palestine, they basically are replacing the population with Jews from all over the world, the Indian Jews, African Jews, European Jews, Russian Jews, American Jews. In Syria, they're replacing our population with, whether it be ISIS terrorists from all over the world, China, Morocco, Germany, or they're replacing us with just Kurds and ethnically cleansing everybody else and destroying our history. And this template is being, for whatever reason, because, like, I don't understand, I kind of understand the logic behind it, but they're doing it in the countries that support them. Because in Syria and Palestine, obviously, we're never going to support Israel. We're not going to allow Israeli control in our country. So I can understand why they want to destroy us and take over our territory. That's what they want. But for whatever reason, they're using us, like, we were just the start, and they were just the gateway to Europe and to the United States.
Like, yeah,
maybe we're like the edge of whiteness. Like, we're not really brown enough. We're kind of in, like, something that is just close, too close. So they have to get rid of us as well.
And yes,
I guess it's no.
They hate all civilized people because they see civilized people as, like, you know, societies where people have the rule of law and command and authority and a strong state. They see these societies as a potential threat to Jews. They thrive in pure anarchy. And, you know, it makes perfect sense for them. You know, here in America, and I was talking to some friends about this before, but, you know, the idea of the universal basic income, like, a lot of people like that idea that Yang put out there, but it's actually quite evil. It's actually what they're doing. What UBI is I'm going to pay you $1,500 a month to go away while still importing millions of people. Because if the idea is that there's no jobs, why do they keep importing millions of people every year into this country? And why is that such an untouchable issue, right? From a pure economic point of view, if the jobs are being automated, but they keep bringing people in, and the reason for this is they see small groups of different people as better partners for the future than the native majority. And it's not just in white countries, because we see this happening in Syria, but we also see it happening in Japan now. In Japan, they're starting to import many, many people into their country. Even though the economy is stagnant, there's no reason for it. But it's just to displace the native majorities, because they don't want any society with a majority, because those majorities can get together and create resistance. And that is why they attack the homogeneity.
Eventually, it will be everywhere. I mean, they're going for Caucasians first, but eventually it will be everywhere. You know, we've seen it.
No, I agree. As well. No, I agree, because I used to believe that it was. Now, you know that there is a conspiracy against whites specifically, because it's happening in every Western country at the same time. But I'm starting to see them make moves in non-Western countries. Like Japan, okay? Japan has a liberal capitalist system, liberal globalist capitalist system, and their conservative government has opened up their borders, okay? So, I mean, why do they do that? Well, go look at some of these Antifa protests in Japan, and it's all, like, the people leading it are either Jewish or white. Isn't that interesting? The people that lead, they have Antifa in Japan, but there's few Japanese people in it. And so my guess is that this is merely the foreign policy of the United States to do this to all nations. You know, that's kind of what the Black Lives Matter thing is too, is that it's American soft power. Some people have brought this up. The fact that Black Lives Matter is only happening in nations that have a strong American, that are in the American sphere of influence, is a sign that it's American soft power. Yep.
Have you seen any Black Lives Matter protests in Africa? No.
It's not
happening in Africa.
I mean, some people would say, like, okay, this is communist, right? Like, these are communists doing this. But then why isn't there any Black Lives Matter in Cuba? You know, the country is 70% black. Where's the Black Lives Matter if it's communists doing this? What about in Venezuela? There's no Black Lives Matter there. It's so interesting. The only places in Latin America that have Black Lives Matter are Argentina and Brazil. Now, Brazil, I can sort of understand, but why in Argentina? There's no black people there. I mean, it's just this is what I mean about the absurdity of this. It's an attack on Western people across the world. It basically, you know, when you're from a different society, so maybe this isn't as true for Australia, but you know, in the Americas, when you attack Christopher Columbus, say what you want. He may have had flaws, whatever. But when you attack Christopher Columbus, you're not attacking Christopher Columbus personally. What they're doing when they tell you this is what Howard Zinn, the founder of anti-Columbus sentiment, was Howard Zinn, a Jew. When they attack Christopher Columbus, what they're doing is they're attacking the very concept of people of European descent living in the New World. So that's basically what the driver is on that stuff, and it's very insidious.
If it was about slavery, then they wouldn't have destroyed a statue of a white Dutch guy who died fighting for abolition.
It's anyone that has a white face is attacked. Anyone, I mean, they even attacked the Frederick Douglass statue. And that's only because he was dressed like a white man from the 19th century. They didn't even know who it was. But that's kind of the key to understanding this, is that a lot of the black people doing this don't understand what they're doing, but the anarchists and the Jews that are doing this absolutely do understand. Why do you think I don't know if you saw this, the Israeli that put out a list of all the statues in Europe he wants to see destroyed. Have you seen this?
No. Is that for real?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. He named Maria Theresa. He named Longshanks. All of these great monarchs, all these great leaders. Louis the Ninth in the United States. Like, Louis the Ninth didn't do anything to black people. Okay? He was. Do you know what Louis the Ninth was famous for? He exposed the Talmud. the Disputation of Paris. That's all he did. And so the fact that his statue is being attacked shows you where the origin of this is.
Was the Churchill on his list?
Excuse me?
Doubt it. Was Winston Churchill on that list? I doubt
no,
it.
No, he wasn't, but they're attacking him anyway, even though, you know, they actually have a point with Churchill.
Did you see the only statue that got like a shed put around it was Churchill's statue. That's the one, it draws a line at Churchill.
Oh, no, conservative, that's the only statue conservatives will defend, is the Churchill statue.
But, it's the only statue the Jewish lobby would allow them to defend.
Right, and Churchill, unlike some of these other people, Churchill actually did kill millions of people. Not just Germans, not just Italians. He killed millions of Bangladeshis. He killed millions of Irishmen. He killed millions of people. Maybe not millions of Irishmen, but he killed a lot of people, okay? And you know what's funny is if you look at just being objective here, like Churchill was actually an unironic white supremacist, unlike Hitler. Hitler believed that whites were maybe, in a scientific sense, whites had advantages and so on, but he didn't want to rule the non-white world. That was something Churchill believed. The reason why Churchill is basically considered a god in Anglo-Saxon countries is because of the fact that he was a dutiful servant of the Jews. And that's sort of what the mindset is. But you know what's funny? Even in the United Kingdom, I don't know if you know this, but in 1945, while World War II was still going, Churchill was voted out. He lost the election in 1945. He was not popular in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah. He was Clement Attlee defeated him in the election, and the war wasn't even over. So, you know, I mean, Churchill was a huge sack of shit. And it's kind of rich irony that they're turning on his statues. But again, that's the headless chicken element. It's not the Zionist element, you know?
Exactly. Which is what I think is when it comes to fighting this beast, that, and when I say like Jewish lobby, I really mean, like, let's be more specific, because to group them all into one homogenous thing is actually doing them a favor. This is Ashkenazi Zionism, whether it be liberal Zionism or right-wing Zionism, it's still Zionism. And they are the ones that own the banks, like, and Hollywood. It's not Mizrahim, it's not Sephardim, it's not those Orthodox guys with the hats and the dancing. You know, it's some of them are, but most of them are, like, it's not the ultra-Orthodox. There are schisms within them, you know, that the whole Zionism, the concept of Zionism, didn't come from Syrian Jews, okay? It came from, the Balfour Declaration was written, signed, sent to Lord Rothschild in the UK. So right. This is a specific group of people that rule.
Rabbi Wise and so everywhere. On as well. They were all involved in that. Stephen Wise.
Yes.
In the Balfour Declaration.
So, and the British
signed the Balfour Declaration. The history of the Balfour Declaration is that the British signed it because they assumed that if they gave international Jewry what it wanted, that they would bring America into the war. And they did. Because a lot of people, I've seen like Jewish historians write about the Balfour Declaration, and what they say is that Balfour and the Home Secretary and so on, that they believed in a Jewish conspiracy, and they signed the Balfour Declaration under the assumption that an international Jewish conspiracy, like they believed in the Protocols of Zion, and so they just agreed and amplified it. Like, they believed in it, and lo and behold, though, what these Jewish historians don't address is, well, why is it that they signed it, and then America did enter the war on the side of on the side of the Allies? Explain that to me. You know, and not to mention also the Bolshevik Revolution. I believe, in my capacity as an independent historian, I believe the Bolshevist Revolution was a product of international Jewry, because remember, till that point, Jews, until the Balfour Declaration, international Jewry supported the Germans in the First World War. I mean, I'm sure you know this, the Warburgs, Schiff, they all supported the Germans because they didn't like the Russians, and the Russians were the allies. So once the Russians were knocked out of the game, that opened by the Bolshevik Revolution, that opened up the field to do the Balfour Declaration, and lo and behold, you got the Americans and the international Jews on the side of the Allies once Russia's out of the picture. Very interesting history, if you will.
I have a theory, like maybe a Near East or centric theory on that revolution in Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution. I also think it has to do with knocking out the Orthodox Church. Because when I look at our region, where the Orthodox Church, like, is the heart of Orthodoxy, and in Palestine and Jerusalem, you know, that was really like the core of Orthodoxy. When the Russians at that time, you know, the Orthodox Church was basically the other side of the coin for the royal family. And if they tried to do, if they tried to create Israel and declare that Jerusalem wasn't Christian anymore, they would have faced opposition from Russia. So they had to knock out any form of opposition they could possibly have, like, encountered from the Orthodox Church, because that was the biggest threat. I think it's part of that. Because, you know, they did destroy all the churches. But I wanted to talk to you about two things. First of all, the Groyper War, and also on the Zoom call, they mentioned artificial intelligence, and that's a new threat. And I want to talk to you about strategy and how, going forward, how are we going to, like, defeat this thing?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so we're all facing the same enemy. That means that it's important that we make alliances. And I, like, in Syria, if they have no problem working with nationalists all over the world. They invited Nick Griffin in. They've had David Duke in. We don't have
The Golden Dawn, NPD in Germany, they all were guests of honor in Syria.
Yes, we had the SSMP. We even had, like, some, you know, they always blame us for the Germans seeking refuge in Syria after World War II. So we don't have these hang-ups that Westerners have. Like, we don't have the white guilt, basically. We don't care. So,
right. Baathism is not the same as social nationalism, but it is a lot closer to it than, I don't know, liberal democracy, right? The Arab world, let's be honest, the Arab world by and large supported the Germans in the Second World War, including and especially the Palestinians. And a lot of Baathism, but especially social nationalism. I actually have the book that I read recently by the founder of the SSNP, and it's very similar to national socialist ideas on society, civilization, economics, even blood and soil.
When it comes to SSMP and Syria, just to be absolutely clear, we don't accept an Arab identity. So for Syrians and basically the Levant, believe in an Aramean, like an Aramaic speaking history and identity, which sets us apart from the Gulf Arabs. Because
they believe
their own culture.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but they see themselves as the extension of not the Carthaginians, the Phoenicians, right?
Yes. The Phoenicians, yes,
they
Canaanites,
see themselves as a Phoenician
Ugarit
race, yes.
Yes. That's what we, like, even like run-of-the-mill Syrians, if you just talk to them, like, even though Baathism is the ideology of, like, pan-Arabism, they all know that we're not the same thing. Like, it's culturally, they don't see, like, Arabs in the Gulf also don't see us as the same thing. Otherwise, they wouldn't, like, it's just, they would have accepted us more readily as refugees. They didn't accept any Syrian refugees. They are more, like, able to ally themselves with Israel, because when it comes to Syria, like, Israel is an existential threat to Syrians, so there's no way we're going to turn around and ally with them. But Israel has been playing up that difference a lot between the Levant, or the Aramean historically speakers, and the Gulf Arabs. Gulf Arabs have their own supremacy, but the Levant, because of its proximity to Europe and the effect that World War II, like, what we were basically a part of World War II. I mean, the Arabs were, but it wasn't, the Gulf Arabs were, but it's not to the extent that we were. And that's why we have ideologies like SSMP. The SSMP doesn't exist for Gulf Arabs. You know, it exists in the Near East. So it's,
the Gulf
it's
Arabs
a little
don't
bit,
want anything to do
they wouldn't
with,
like
with
it to
people.
Be called Arabs. I think that's the
yeah,
idea
Gulf,
of it.
Gulf Arabs are racially distinct. Syrians are Eastern Mediterranean people. I mean, that's what the Phoenicians were. And they are distinct, and you know, obviously they create a very different society than the kind of weird fanaticism of these Gulf Arab states. And also, like, you know, there's like a, even a moral difference. I find that Gulf Arabs are far more different.
Like,
yes, Gulf Arabs are far more different than Europeans compared to Syrians or Lebanese. I mean, just speaking objectively, Syrians and Lebanese are closer to Europeans in many in their outlook and in many ways, even than anyone from Saudi Arabia or, you know, things like that. Like, this is very radically different societies.
Yes, even from like it's very radically different to for me to go to the Gulf. Like, they're not going to think I'm one of them. You know, I've been there, and they don't think so. So even if I talk to them in their language, they still we're still othered by each other.
Well, how could they tell if they make you? Didn't they make you wear a beekeeper suit when you went to the Gulf?
No, this was Dubai, so no need. But the problem is because of the otherness, they have been able to, like, of course they've been, the Zionists have been able to exploit that. So I'm not saying there's anything like wrong with their culture. They can survive in extreme environments, like that's amazing in and of itself. But it's just different.
Let's be honest, Miriam. Let's be honest here. I'll be honest for you. Okay, I'm gonna say. The Jews support the Saudis and the Gulf Arabs because they're dumb.
Absolutely.
Because they're dumber. I mean, that's because they're dumber. I mean, that's why they will find wherever there's an advanced and enlightened race fighting against a dumb destructive group. Jews will side with the destructive group because they want to destroy the enlightened group. And that's why they will side with ISIS against the Iranians and the Shiites. You know, historically, this is objectively from my view as a person that has studied these histories, Shiite empires going all the way back to the early beginning of Islam, even in parts where they interacted with Europeans, Shiites were actually the Shiite empires, the Persian-led empires, were more tolerant of different religions and practices, more advanced than the Sunni empires were. That's just how it is. Now, that's not to say all Sunnis, right? Because there are very radical distinctions amongst Sunnis. But the reason why Jews will side with, I don't know, the United Arab Emirates or the Saudi Arabians is because they're decadent. It's because they're stupid. It's because they're violent. It's because they don't have any higher ideals. They just want to drive around in Lamborghinis with, freaking...
I do love that, though. Sorry.
Yeah, they want to do tricks with their cars.
I love that.
With a pet tiger in the passenger seat. Like, that's the kind of stuff they want to do. And you know, they just know... I'm looking at this video now.
Yes. I mean, it's pretty...
Like, that's the kind of stupid crap they do, and that's why Jews love them. They want to give them arms. And look at how they brutalize. It's just no humanity, no empathy for other human beings. Look at how they treat the Yemeni, the Yemen people, right? The Houthis. Just pure barbarism. And that's why Jews love them. Because deep down inside, Jews are just as barbaric as these people. That's why they see themselves in black rioters or criminals. They see themselves in Saudi terrorists, and they see themselves in Kurdish terrorists, and they see themselves in Uyghurs going around stabbing little Chinese girls in a terrorist attack. They see themselves in Albanians causing problems in the Balkans. They see themselves in all of these different contexts, and it's always very predictable. If there's a group that is imposing order and justice and civilization, Jews will support the anti-civilization group. Yes.
they see themselves in nomadic societies, like the Kurds, like the Bedouins. Because that's their origin. They were like the whole origin story of Jews is that they were nomads in the desert, right? So I don't know if that's
They were pastoral. They're a pastoral race, but I think what goes beyond that though is I think they just want to kill all the people in the world that could be their competitors, especially if they outnumber them. They don't want any competition for power in the world. So they always will elevate the antisocial, anti-civilizational element every damn time. Okay. And it's very predictable. I mean, that's U.S. foreign policy. Find me a society where a gypsy steals an old lady's purse and the U.S. government will be giving money to the gypsy to do it to more people. I mean, that's just how this country works. This is how this government works. It's run by Jews. That's why. You know, I mean, from a pure objective point of view, Miriam, you know, the United States should be trading in diplomatic alliance with Iran, which has oil. It has a sophisticated society. It has a large middle class. It has people that don't necessarily hate America, even though the government says death to America. They're talking about Zog. They're not talking about the average American. They have a lot of respect for our culture, our real Western culture, not like the Jerry Springer Netflix culture. You know, and all these things that, like, there's a lot of points of contact there compared to the Saudis. There's literally nothing in common. Nothing in common. There's nothing between Western people and Saudis that can possibly be a point of contact other than, you know, taking a dump on Instagram models. Like, that's the kind of right? But what is that a point of contact in? Right? That's not the Western people that have that value. That is the Jews that have that value, and they see themselves in the Saudis who do that kind of stuff. So,
interesting that a lot of hip-hop idealizes that decadence in the Gulf Arab culture and, like, gives that to black people as the ideal. Like, you have to be, look at all the stuff they have, all the stuff, all the material wealth and excess and waste, that is the height of making it in the world and being respected. That's the idea that's sold.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's why the Ayatollah, I believe, one of those guys said, you know, they killed our Soleimani, but who do we get in retaliation? SpongeBob? You know? He's like, who do we get? How do we get our vengeance? Do we kill Spider-Man? He's totally right.
We have no heroes.
He's not wrong. Besides, and you know why we don't have heroes? It's not because we don't have the potential to have heroes. It's because the Jews have totally destroyed our ability to transcend, to create a collectivist culture, to have something to die for, something to live and die for. They've taken all that away from us. We don't have families. We don't have order. We don't have a higher ideal. We only have materialism, hedonism, individualism. You know, these are the values that these are the only values allowed. And whenever there's a country like Syria or like Iran that will resist the entry of these values into their society, they want to destroy these countries. So that's what explains foreign policy in a nutshell.
It's if you imagine society, like if you imagine the world without Israel, the U.S. would have no reason not to be allied with Syria. There would be zero reason not to have a good relationship with Syria.
Right.
That's even now, like, why choose Israel when you could choose Syria? It's a bigger landmass. We have access to the Mediterranean Sea. Like, Russia got Syria as a consolation prize, basically, because right. They wanted Israel first, the USSR. But Israel was like, I think I'm going to go with America. So
yes, they went full America. Yeah.
Yeah, they went with the one with the nukes first. So when it comes to like strategizing against this, because when people are rigid, so okay, when it comes to the Groiper Wars, right, there's a crowd of people right now that are trying to pull back, because the reason I think that Black Lives Matter and all of this is happening is because there was a like rising in awareness about the Zionist power over the United States. And I think part of that was because of the war in Syria. Of course, the war in Iraq and Libya were contributing factors, but Syria was a big red pill. And as a result, there was a lot more white nationalists and other types of nationalists that are on the rise. And they see that as a threat, and they even say so themselves in the Zoom call that you leaked. You didn't leak it, but you showed it on your channel. Yeah, they basically are using black people as a sword and trying to turn them on those white nationalists and Antifa, of course. But black people are not Black Lives Matter. Like, it's not necessarily, they're not necessarily an enemy. So they want to make it a black-white thing rather than Jewish privilege on trending on Twitter. But it doesn't have to be that way. Like, there is... there's lots of potential for a common enemy being the Zionists and not each other. So if you look at basically strategy-wise,
let me just bring up one counterpoint though. Sure. Couldn't you make that argument between the Syrians and Iranians and the Saudis as well? You could make argument, couldn't you? That they should make a common enemy against the Zionists. The problem is the genius of the Zionists is that they create an incentive structure for the one group to not take that agreement. And I agree halfway with you that we should try and break that Jewish-led anti-white coalition. However, the problem is a lot of black people now are starting to realize that if you harass a white person and film them and get them fired from their job and stuff, that somehow translates into getting you money. That yes. If you scream racism, yeah, that you get money for that. They don't know why or how or what the mechanism is, but that is the incentive that the Zionists have created for them. Now, I do also support a common front against the Zionists with black nationalists. And, you know, some of them actually are not against the idea either, and I think that that should be a point of alliance. But remember, there's a big difference between Black Lives Matter and actual black nationalism. Black Lives Matter is made to disinform black people, misinform black people, and turn them against whites, while black nationalism is about winning black independence and actually creating an agreement between the white man and the black man in terms of how to live in this country together. So
yeah,
that is a major distinction, yes.
It's a huge, and you're absolutely right to like compare it to the relationship of Syria and the Gulf Arabs, because I, as just a normal Syrian, after what I experienced from the Gulf, you know, they're bringing in ISIS, they're gun running, they're destroying the country. Like, I had a rejection of any possibility of ever being allied to them. Like, they're useless. They'll never be a tool against Zionism. They're like the hand of Zionism, and they're destroying us. ISIS, I see, is like a second Israel. The Saudi Arabia is supporting the Kurds as well. So it's it's easy for me to say never again. And I've been down that road, but I know at the end of the day, that's what Israel wants. So I have to reject it. Like, I have to be open to the possibility that these people can be changed. Hopefully. Right. I don't know how long it's going to take or if it's even possible, but I have to be open.
But it is a similar dynamic between the Gulf Arabs and the Syrians and Lebanese. That kind of conflict, even to a lesser extent, Sunni versus Shia, but that's not always a purely perfect divide. That is kind of the similar. It's almost identical, actually, to race relations in the United States. You have a besieged group. You have other little groups that are whipped up against the besieged group, and you know that's how you have. You know, just reminds me so much of when you see stories of Shia Muslims that are asked what their religion is, and then the ISIS members will decapitate them. You know, it's almost identical to when groups of blacks will take a white person and say, hey, do you agree with Black Lives Matter? And the person says no, or says all lives matter, and that person is either killed or assaulted. It's almost play for play identical to how this works. You know, it's the unleashing of savagery with a political intention, a malicious political intention. What do you think of that?
It's hard to see past that and to the hand that's behind it. And like in seeing that people totally question your allegiance, like why are you, you know, talking to these people? But the thing is that it's not just like you said. Black Lives Matter to me as a Easterner is U.S. hegemony, because it's not in Africa. It's not about the Middle East. It's not about starving Yemeni children. It should be called American Black Lives Matter.
Why?
Because it's just a Western concept. You know, they don't.
Yeah, well, it's actually a Jewish.
It's concept. Interesting because I wrote on Twitter that, like, Orwell said it himself. You know, some animals are all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Right.
And this is like in the context of All Lives Matter, actually. You know, according to them, some lives matter more than others. And this guy, this African American man comes out and says, "Well, look at this Karen. She's a white nationalist." And I turned around and I said, "You know, actually, I was talking about Yemen. I was talking about how there's kids, brown kids, starving in Yemen, and here you are." In the first world, your belly is full of food and you don't give a damn. And you're talking to me about privilege and race and how, like, my white skin makes me more privileged than you, while your country and your Obama just obliterated my country. It's what a crock. It's ridiculous. So there's many ways to attack this BLM thing. You can attack it with its own... You can attack it with its own concept of privilege. You can point these things out to them that they're hypocrites. And he just shut up. Like, he can't... What can he say to that? So, in that sense...
Well, that's the thing about that. Like, you know, if these people wanted to have a conversation about police brutality, I would be on their side. Like, I would be on their side in the sense that, like, you know, in this country... You know, they murder people, oftentimes innocent, but the problem is every case they show up with is always a black guy that is kind of questionable. That, you know, in the case of George Floyd, if you look at the autopsy, the guy basically swallowed all of his drugs and died of an overdose. It wasn't just the knee on the neck, you know, that played a substantial role. So the thing is, like, you know, what about that woman who's like a yoga instructor that was shot by a black police officer, right? Uh-huh.
Sorry? So I'm just saying,
there's a case of a six-year-old boy, a six-year-old white boy in Louisiana, Jeremy Martis, who was executed by two black policemen. And the black policeman said his father was running from them and he was reaching for a gun. They didn't find any gun. They published the body cam footage. The father had his arms out of his car, begging them not to shoot, and they opened fire anyway. And they shot his six-year-old son to death. They killed his son.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, actually. Yes.
Yeah, and one of the cops did, like, 2 years, and he's out. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about. Or how about the case of Daniel Shaver, where the police officer shot him. The man is begging for his life. It's on camera. Begging him not to shoot, begging for his life, and he opened fire on him. Not just once, he unloaded his weapon, and that cop not only beat his charges, he is getting a pension from the taxpayer. So if they wanted to have a conversation about police brutality, we could have that conversation. But they don't want to. They want to have a conversation about why. They want to get Jewish corporate consultants, Jewish corporate diversity consultants, to browbeat lower middle class white people once again. That's what this is about. It's not even about black people, because look at them. Ever since this Black Lives Matter thing started, the police stopped policing black neighborhoods. The murder rate has gone through the roof. They're shooting like 5-year-old black girls across the country. Okay, like black children are being killed en masse across the country, and it's all because of this Black Lives Matter stuff of going after like certain policing and so on in these neighborhoods well, if Black Lives, you know, this is a very boomerish kind of normal point, but if Black Lives Matter, if Black Lives mattered to them, they would be talking about this. But they're, but it's not about black people or their lives or anything. It's about attacking whites. That is the fundamental point about this, you know?
It's, you know, I understand the argument like, okay, there's black-on-black violence, but it is a boomer point because at the, like, the problem they have is institutionalized violence that isn't like where the state itself commits that violence and then doesn't deal justly. But that, for some reason, we're not allowed to talk about that for when it happens to non-black people. We're only allowed to talk about it in the black context. And if you dare to talk about the fact that it happens to non-black people, then you're automatically racist. And because they have to control that narrative, because it's not really about, I mean, yeah, it's about attacking, it's about using it as a sword against white people and bringing it back to, especially targeting white nationalists and nothing else, like nothing improving the lives of black people. As Malcolm X himself said, it's not about improving their lives.
So, no, of course not. So let's get to the, we got 30 minutes left. Let's get to the questions here. Frank, what's on the menu?
All right.
One last thing though about Silicon Valley.
Oh, go ahead. Yes.
The Zoom call that you received, we have to be cautious. So in conclusion, with everything that I'm saying is strategically, you can't, if I were you guys, what do the Zionists do? They don't just pick the right wing or the left wing. They pick both. They move both. And if I were you guys, this is what I've tried to do. It's a difficult thing to do because you're going to make enemies from either side. Because people are very rigid in their view, but you have to move you can't be rigid. You have to attack them in both directions. Attack them from the left and attack them from the right. They won't see it coming. You know, attack them for being racist against black people in Israel and attack them, you know, for something for being racist against white people. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
I do that all the time. I do that, yeah. No, I'm not.
Yes.
The people have a problem with that are conservative types like that. That's the only people that have an issue with
the
that. I am
stuff,
very
right?
much pro-Palestine. I'm always covering very closely when Jews are doing what they do in Israel, because it really shows, because what it demonstrates is it takes your credibility away. I mean, I've seen their internal documents, how insecure they are about their very important coalition of anti-whites, which includes all kinds of different interests. All of them being promised the world if they go along with it. And eventually they're going to realize that they're just being manipulated. And that's something that the ADL is very concerned about, according to their own memos. So beating on that and starting to drive wedges between that is very important. And also to bring those people their own consciousness. Because I'm convinced that if these different groups had their own consciousness and didn't just deal through the prism of Jews, that they would actually agree with much of what I believe. So that's kind of
Jews like the Jews against Zionism, you know, even they, as you saw in the Zoom call, are good. Even that, you know, people are like, oh, but the Jews. No, even that can be a tool against Zionism. So, and again, like the last thing I want to say is with artificial intelligence. That's the biggest threat right now in Silicon Valley. They're going to try to police language. It's like 1984. So I don't know what the solution is to that, but it's a huge threat because we can't even speak to each other, especially on the platforms. The problem is that when they isolate us out of the social media giants like Twitter, Facebook, we are no longer have access to the hearts and minds of the normie. We no longer have access, like, I can no longer push my anti-Martin Luther King line to people who get it. So that's something we need to discuss and strategize.
I will say something about that. I understand, and that's a true point in the short term, but I've noticed through my own platform and various others that even though I'm almost completely deplatformed, I mean, this show, as soon as we're done, I'm going to have to take it down and upload it to TRS. But even though I'm completely deplatformed, I noticed that people are willing to go out of their way to find our stuff nowadays because things are so untenable and the narratives they're given are so stupid that people will go out of their way to find you on your own website. I can tell you this because the traffic to TRS has been exploding, like really like big increases on national-justice. I'm increasing my traffic every month. I'm up to about 300,000 readers a month now on National Justice, which is good for a publication that's about almost a year old. So I'm noticing that conservatives are losing steam and nationalists are gaining steam because it's simply the historic moment demands it. That's why, like, a lot of groypers that go around say, whoa, look at Ben Shapiro, he's getting based. And I'm like, he's not getting based. It's not that you've changed his mind on anything. It's that he has to sound more like us, because if he doesn't, his audience is going to walk. They're going to come and read our stuff. They're going to come and listen to our stuff. Ben Shapiro needs to sound more and more like us to control the opposition. So that's something people should not get wrong, and you should never help them in doing that, because you're not changing their mind. You're giving them your audience. So that's something that people have to understand about the nefarious conservatives. But anyway, Miriam, we do have to get the questions, so let's get these underway. What's up? What do we have, Frank?
All right, we'll start with the two we missed from last week. We got Chuck Finks donating 10 and saying good stream, fellas.
Ah, thank you, Mr. Fix.
All right, we got Fascistas donating 10 and says, love all three of you guys, Frank included. What is the difference between a tepid alliance with leftists or minorities to achieve our goal and a tepid alliance with paleocon and WN libertarian types? Why can one work and not the other?
I don't understand that question. I mean...
Oh, I guess it's... He's saying, well,
I think it's either a dumb, presumptuous troll, or he's probably going to say that, oh, you guys believe in winning over leftists, and yet you won't pander more or play more towards conservatives. And what I'll say about that is very simple, is what's evil about paleocons will be just as or more anti-fascist than any leftist. And the reason for that is that their position, the paleocon position, say Rod Dreher, right? They are the absolute last line of defense that is in place, funded by the system. Their entire existence is predicated on people not being able to get to us. They're supposed to be the last catch, the net underneath. And so if people start going through that net and coming to us, then they lose their prestige and their position. So the point I'm making here is that these guys are going to fight you more than any, well, with the exception of maybe Antifas and stuff, but paleocons will fight people like me more aggressively than they will any communist, okay? Paleocons will attack me personally in ways they would never even dream of doing to a leftist, to any other group, okay? Mm-hmm. So, especially a Jew. But the point is that it's not that I don't want to create alliances with paleocons. I would love to. The question here, Mr. Questioner, is go bring that to them and ask them why they attack me and guys like me. So go take your question and bring it to them. There you go.
Definitely. All right, moving on, we got Dan96 donating 100 and says, a vote for...
Nice, thank you.
Yes, a vote for either party is a vote for more aid to Israel. I personally will be staying home. Unless there is an important ballot measure in my state, have you seen any initiatives in different states to keep an eye on this November?
Yeah, I haven't looked into that yet, but what is sorely needed is a third party to at least protest vote. Yes. And I can say this right now, this is underway. There is actually work being done on this front. There should be a third party starting to take form at least by next month. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
Think if they don't want to, like, if they don't want to set a specific ideology, they can at least have a boycott election movement. Like, sign your name here to declare you're boycotting the election, rather than say, vote for this party that stands for these things. If they won't be willing to do that, if I was American, which I'm not, I would have a boycott movement.
Yes, indeed.
There you go.
Let's go to the next.
All right, we got a C. Fenris donating 10 with no message. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we got Knight of Mirrors donating 7 and asks, while Republicans need to be sent a message through the ballot, could a Biden presidency move us back to a less radical status quo? Despite his terrible governance and the energizing of the left, the Trump presidency has accelerated racial consciousness.
I disagree, actually. I think the Trump presidency was the culmination of racial consciousness that was brewing up in the Obama era, particularly the second term. And it culminated in Trump. Trump saw an opportunity and he took it. He did Finkelfink, where he took Pat Buchanan's issues with Ross Perot's money. He was able to win. But in power, Trump has not accelerated this at all, because now people will be like, well, I don't have to worry because I know my entire country is being burned down, but I don't have to worry because Daddy Trump's got it. There's a false sense of security of Trump being in power, when in reality, when the shit hits the fan, Mr. Trump gets in his underground bunker. And we're the ones that have to eat shit out here out in the open, okay? Because remember, Trump was, as a friend of mine said, Trump was the white working class pointing a gun at the Jews, but the gun jammed. The gun jammed, and that's why, you know, people have to understand this. The system doesn't design us, the oligarchs. They don't hate Trump. They don't like him, but they don't hate him. The people they hate are his voters, okay? That's why you see what's going on in America, this fake cultural revolution. It's not affecting Trump. This fake cultural revolution is affecting ordinary white people. That's who they're getting their revenge on. That's who they're getting their vengeance on. It's the people that they see as the enablers, the men who put gun. Trump gave Trump the gun and it jammed, and someone said it blew up in our faces. So Trump is actually worse than useless. Look at who Trump is. He's not even good on Senate races. I mean, he won't endorse Kobach. He won't endorse Sessions. Instead, he endorses their opponents. The Republican Party is spending millions of dollars to block Kobach from winning the Senate seat. It's just amazing. Like, they're worse than nothing. Okay, we can't get anything for the normal people as long as the Republican Party is out there sucking up all the oxygen in the room. And Trump is speaks to this element in our people, in our country, and that is why he's so dangerous, because he is totally fake. He's right now, he's going to sound more and more like us because he's in a campaign year, but as soon as he gets reelected, he is going to do amnesty. He's going to probably start a war with Iran. God knows what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. Whatever he does do in his second term, it's not going to be good. So I personally don't think there's going to be a drastic difference between Joe Biden being in office and Trump. And I know a lot of Groyper types will disagree. But here's the thing. You don't even have to convince me. Go convince the average white voter that isn't going to bother in November because Trump they perceive as useless, and Joe Biden is not galvanizing like AOC will be. So you have to convince them to vote again, not me. Okay, that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. The way I look at it is I'm trying to delegitimize Biden as much as possible rather than support Trump, but just point out the hypocrisy of the whole Biden thing. Because from a Near Eastern Syrian perspective, what I can see is Biden is going to be used to sell a Kurdish state much more easily than Trump might, because Trump has already said that he doesn't like the Kurds. It was written about in a book. Of course, Trump can flip any time, but he's been has to sell it to his people. So he's selling it as we're in Syria to get the oil, rather than we're in Syria because Israel wants us to be there to deny Syrians their oil. So and to create this Curtis thing. So maybe Biden would be an easier sell, but at this point, Biden, as you said, Trump is also just keeping the lid on people who just don't want to continue these wars, because a lot of these conservatives are like, but Trump ended the war on Syria. Like, how? He's occupying Syria right now. How in your mind has he ended the war on Syria? But unfortunately, this delusion persists, and maybe if you remove Trump, you're going to remove the blinders.
Yeah, yeah. I think with Joe Biden too, like, it's going to galvanize people in this country. If there's a Democrat in charge, they're going to see he's going to have very similar policies to Trump in his second term. I guarantee it. And people will be more willing to fight if it's a Democrat, I feel. But again, we can only see when it happens. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the next question.
All right. We got Deutsch Dog. Deutsch Doge donates $5. No message. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Tam, Big Tam with the 20. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Tam.
Juice Hank donated $5. No message. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Juice.
Jimmy Russell's donated. Well,
I love me some juice, especially when they're concentrated.
When you talk about the juice. Jimmy Russell donates $5 and asks Eric, does Eric have an anime waifu?
You know, that's none of your business, so I'm not going to even answer that.
Okay.
It's none of your fucking business. Ask me about my fucking waifus.
Xi Jinping donates $4.88 with no message. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Z.
And then we got Glenn the Chinaman donating $1 and asks, Japan's first appointed head rabbi, Benjamin Edry, has said his goal is to prepare Japan for the Moshik, Moisha, also, Moisha, is that, I don't know how the fuck it's, it looks like, I'll post it in the side chat here, also said that the goal of Chabad's houses around the world, what does he mean by this?
I don't know, I couldn't understand that question.
Yeah. I'll post it to you. We'll go move on to the next one.
Let's move to the next one.
All right. Tyree donates $3 and asks, is Syrian girl aware of Jewish tricks in Syria like Eli Cohen, who infiltrated the government, or the Iraqi Jews who staged a coup against the Nazi-aligned government in Iraq with the British?
I'm aware of the Eli Cohen thing because the president Hafez al-Assad caught him and hung him, and now his body is buried in an undisclosed location, maybe multiple locations. Who knows? So yeah, I'm aware. I mean, good spies don't get caught. Just if an Israeli tries to glorify Eli Cohen and all of those, you know, like the greatest spy that ever lived, all you have to say is good spies don't get caught. And that's what the Syrians did to Eli Cohen. So I don't know about the Iraq thing. That's interesting. Thank you. There is something I remembered that I did want to say quickly, that while Syrians in Syria don't have a problem with white nationalism, what I noticed is that immigrants from the Middle East in the West are immediately indoctrinated by lefties and told to fear and step away from the white nationalists that hate them. And this is something we have to break down as a wall.
Yeah. No, I find, you know, it's funny. No one hates white people more than people that live in white countries. If you go to a lot of other places around the world, like, you just don't see it, right? Like, I was telling people before, like, white people in Mexico, aside from the regular crime, like, I know like white nationalists that live in Mexico, and they were telling me that, like, people here are a lot less anti-white than if you cross the border into America, where there's a whole menu of institutions and policies that are meant to discriminate against people of European descent. So, yeah, that's another interesting thing. And again, we can thank the Jews for that. They are the ones that
actually got unfollowed by fellow, like, Middle Easterners because of my position on BLM. Like, it's that
that's the, so
they're taught so much to to take that. They're indoctrinated into the only, your only allies are these Antifa who that hate Israel. So, sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Just putting that out there.
And you know what's funny is that I talked to actual Antifa people. Like, I had a debate with Vosh, and this guy is openly an imperialist. Like, he was like, yeah, we need to impose feminism and gay rights and this and that to, on all countries, even if by force. He was saying something like that. And I'm like, well, who the fuck asked for your opinion? Like, have you asked the people in these countries if they want that? Oh, he's like, it doesn't matter, he said. I don't care what they think. And so I'm like, so you want people, you don't care what these people think, but you want them to live under your system, what you think is right and wrong. And I said, you know, how's any different from Rudyard Kipling? Or something like that. How's that like any different from any kind of colonial force or any kind of imperialist force? So that's actually what leftists think. So all these Arabs out there that will join forces with Antifa in the West, like, you gotta remember, these leftists will applaud as they kill millions of your people in war, even if they pretend they don't. They will in cases like Syria. They will applaud as they kill your people in the name of human rights. Okay, humanitarian intervention, as they call it. So, yeah. You know, the anarchists also supported the terrorists in Libya against Gaddafi. Okay, how many people have died because of that? Not just in the war, but also in the post-war environment of Libya. How many people have died thanks to anarchists who supported the U.S. intervention? They had the fake Libyan Freedom Army or whatever. I remember anarchists used to go out protesting in their favor. So this is what the Antifa think, okay? They believe in killing people all around the world. So anyway.
It's a tool of Zionism. But what a hypocrisy. What? Sorry for an aside, yeah. But yes. Let's go back to the questions. I'm so sorry. I distracted us.
You're good. We're moving on to Bruni donates $1 and says, Arabians are the joggers of Asia Minor.
I get that.
Get a little censorship.
Yep. I don't know about that. But...
All right, Richard donates 10 and says, "Unite the Right fell off. What happened to our high energy? Do we have anything left for an organized opposition to these Marxists?"
Yeah, you just have to recreate the energy. You have to make chances. That's it. The desire is there. It's just on up to you to make something out of that and to fight through all the different institutional barriers to make something out of it. Like I was telling some friends before, like we're talking about politics and this and that. And I'm like, you know, if we were ever to create a political movement, a peaceful, you know, peaceful revolution, engage with politics, and this political movement was successful, even getting 5 to 10% vote or something. Like, they're just going to start killing us. Like, they're just going to start trying to kill us. Like, the government will just start trying to assassinate us and shit. So, I mean, that's something to think about when it happens. But, you know, the appetite for that is there already. It's being built. There's just no one there to fill the vacuum of opposition. So
didn't the Boogaloo movement immediately get listed as a terrorist organization, and yet Antifa still hasn't?
Yeah, well, the Boogaloo, I'll tell you about the Boogaloo movement. Boogaloo movement is like, it was invented by the FBI. That's my take on that. What the Boogaloo movement was, there was a lot of shady people on Telegram that were doing Boogaloo stuff like a year ago. And apparently, what my theory on that is that the FBI was unable to get enough arrests through that. And so they expanded the definition of Boogaloo to mean libertarians and anarcho-capitalists. In order to widen the net of people, but I am convinced that Boogaloo stuff is basically created by the FBI at this point. I mean, I don't know, but anyway.
Well, yeah, it's probably a net catching thing, but it's just interesting how they so quickly list any perceived to be white groups on the terror list just immediately. But Antifa, no, the UN comes out in defense of Antifa.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is the president came out and said he was going to put Antifa on a terrorist watch list, but it was just pure bluster. And that's what I mean about Trump being so dangerous, is that Trump tells his voters that, hey, I'm going to do something about these anarchists that are beating and killing you in the street, and then he doesn't do it. But these people, the people that are targeted by the anarchists, they go to bed that night calm, thinking about, oh, Daddy Trump's got it. He's going to figure it out for me. And he's actually not going to do that. In fact, it's the other way around. Trump's Department of Justice will go after some moron in a Hawaiian shirt who calls himself a boogaloo. Okay, that's how it actually works. So yeah. Anyway.
All right. We got Glenn the Chinaman donating another one and says, not only Ashkenazi is destructive, the Sassan family were a bunch of Baghdadi Mizrahi Jews and were instrumental in founding Hong Kong as a drug port and center for international finance. For your information, I'm Taiwanese, but went to university in Japan, speak fluent Japanese.
That is correct. It was the Sassoons. The Sassoons, I believe, were Iraqi Jews who were closely affiliated to the British Crown. And they were the ones that founded Hong Kong as a place to basically launder drug money. It's basically a place to control the drug trade in Asia, the opium trade. And Sephardics and Mizrahis were actually quite prominent in the United Kingdom in the 19th century because they had a lot of wealth that they made in the Ottoman Empire. They made a lot of money through the Spanish and Portuguese empires and so on. And then they moved to the Germanic countries like the Netherlands and Britain. They became very prominent there. In fact, in the 19th century, a Sephardic and to a lesser extent a Mizrahi was considered to be more powerful in the Jewish community than the typical Ashkenazi, at least in the 18th century into the 19th century, because a lot of Ashkenazis were locked up in ghettos in Poland. So they weren't really out of that milieu. They're kind of seen as low status in some circles. So it's very interesting. But the Sephardic Jews were the ones that were big players in the slave trade, for example, you know, things like that.
I guess when it comes to Syrian Jews, you know, they never caused issues inside the country like Ashkenazi Jews are causing. But of course, there's always going to be different examples. But our problem today, I guess, is very much more Ashkenazi. The Ashkenazis see Mizrahim at the moment, they see them as beneath them. Like, even they say, oh, Ashkenazi IQ is highest, not the same as Mizrahi, which is lower. But, of course, there's always different examples. Maybe I'm always open to different ideas, so...
All right. Oh, let's go to the next one.
We got Pakistani Anarchy donating $7 and says, Humpty Trumpety bragged about a wall. Humpty Trumpety was a big fraud. All the white women and all the white men never voted for Trumpety ever again. Hashtag delete conservatism.
There you go. Trumpety can't fall off the wall because he doesn't have one. There you go. There's a Humpty Trumpety.
He's got a fucking fence. All right. Mina Batty Seeker donates $3.48 and asks, how to acquire Syrian waifu? Must convert / already be Orthodox Christian? Must be base and red-pilled. How do I go about this?
Go down to Syria, I guess. Or Lebanon. I'm sure you'll have many lining up to meet up with you.
Many options. All right. Kegs donates $2.88 and says, "Live chat ain't free. The tree of Nazbol and white bathism gotta be watered with the bands of Spurs." Nick Fuentes, aka Catboy, is not my comrade. He is a Zionist and probably homosexual as well. Striker.
Listen, we all love dunking on him, but
there's people whispering.
Let's not get on. Let's not get.
There's always a chance to whisper the other way.
Huh?
There's people whispering in his ear, like Jacob Warhol, Milo Yiannopoulos. You know those guys. But
well, my thing about Fuentes is he keeps asking people like, why is everyone thinking I'm a Zionist? I'm not a Zionist. I'm like, well. Why are all your associates Jews then? You got Ashley Ray Graper. Ashley Ray Goldenberg. You got Jacob Wohl. You got Milo. I can Darren Beattie. I got all these Jews that are clearly plugged into Nick Fuentes' inner network, inner workings. There's clearly someone spending a lot of money to promote him. Because I'm telling you, some of the conservatives you see that promote Fuentes, like P.J. Watson, that guy doesn't do anything for free. Okay? That guy is a whore. He's a prostitute. You have to pay him to do something. He is such a pussy, he won't even promote Alex Jones on Twitter anymore. So if he's promoting Fuentes, which he does, you know, it's clearly for money. Again, I don't want to speculate. I don't care. It's none of my business. As long as he's not attacking me, I want them to do their own thing, to be far away from me and my thing and my guys. Go do your own thing. Don't associate with us in any way. Don't attack us or be friendly to us. We don't want anything to do with you.
To be honest, so I've been attacked by them a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's funny,
and
they
take you out of context.
They love to attack women unless they're Jewish or non-white. I mean, you know, maybe they would consider, I don't know if they're considering you white or not, but
they don't like the point is, the baddies. That's what they call us.
Excuse me, what?
They don't like Mina baddies or e-girls. Like, yeah, that's what they call us.
Yeah, but they don't say that to, I don't know, they don't say that to Michelle Malkin. They don't say that to Ashley Ray Goldenberg. I mean, what does Ashley Ray Goldenberg contribute to anything, right? They promote her instead. So the only people that they seem to attack for being e-girls are like the few women that do useful things like Lauren Southern or you, things like that. So, you know, again, it's very selective how they do that. So I don't know. I mean, we can sit here and speculate about what motivates them, what they want or anything, but it's actually in the end better to just ignore them. Okay? This is some kind of bullshit that the Republican people that are donors to the Republican Party are almost certainly giving them money to do this crap, and then they're going to take people round and round. They want to recreate 2016 meme magic. They want to recreate the Trump phenomenon that was they want to connect with the 4chan people and all that, and they're going to fail because there's no substance behind it. So let them do their own thing. Again, they're costing someone a lot of money. So eventually a person can get tired and they're going to cut them off like they did with the alt-right in 2017. So again, Miriam, sometimes you make the mistake of responding to trolls, and you should just stop doing that. You should never respond to them. Just ignore them. Just block them.
There was one time, I mean, it's usually a mistake, but there was one time that I exposed like one of these trolls by asking them. I said, I'll leave Australia right now if you just post like propaganda promoting SSMP, and he refused to do it. That was hilarious. But yeah, you're right. It's a waste of time.
Yeah, I love how these people will say, oh, get out of my country, get out of Australia and this and that. But like, you know, they wouldn't say that to a Jewish person on Twitter, because if they did, the Australian government would raid their houses and throw them in prison for 100 years.
That's correct.
Fucking convenient that they picked the one person that has no institutional support to do that to. The same pussies would never say boo to a Jew. So fuck them. You don't even have to respond to that shit.
You're right.
You should stop responding to that shit.
It's just so fun to find.
If people are targeting you for that kind of stuff, it's because you're doing something politically that people don't like. And when I mean people, I mean probably your enemies. Okay, so why respond to your enemies? That's all I'll say.
You're absolutely right. I have a lot of fights in me, so sometimes I get addicted to fights, and I should. But I have stopped now. I'm stopping.
Yeah, but you gotta pick and choose your fights too, because you just
true.
The problem with picking stupid fights, and this is something I've learned, is that when you waste your energy on a stupid fight, you're gonna be out of breath for the real fight. Okay, and so that's kind of why you have to save your mental and spiritual and physical energy for, you know, when it's worth it. You know, if you see some retard with a Groiper avatar talking shit to you, like, that's just someone to ignore. Like, it's not a person that matters. So that's all I'll say about that. Anyway, next one.
Okay, good advice.
All right, we got Pakistani Anarchy donating another $5 and says, Iran's new military deal with Syria is good news. Iranian air defense caters to countering Israeli cyberspace intrusion. Remember, Israel's shot down Hermes drone in 2014 by Iran.
Well, I mean, they haven't attacked Iran yet. And that's because the Iranians can fight back. And so the Israelis must know more than the public knows about this. And I'm sure the Iranians have all kinds of gadgets and weapons that are not publicly known that can really fuck Israel up and even America up. So, yeah.
I think that it's a great thing because, as you can see, Syria is getting an Israeli attack. Air defenses.
You're cutting out Miriam a little bit.
Sorry. Is this better? Is this better?
Yes.
Oh, basically, the Russian air defense has one fatal flaw, and that's the Zionist lobby inside of Russia. So it's very good to have like Iranian air defense systems connecting to the Syrian one, so that we can actually stop Israel bombing us constantly.
Right. No, I agree with that. All right, definitely. Let's go to the next one.
All right, Fearsin Oct Sig donates $10 and says, keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Zero Skits donates $1. It says, the anarchist vanguard, which is exported to South America, are mainly Mark Bray, Peru and Ecuadorian, Alexander Reed Ross, Brazilian, and Spencer Sunshine, Argentinian, all of them Jews and crypto-Zionists. By the way, can Syrian girl talk about Michael Affleck?
I'm sorry, I can't because I don't know who he is. Sorry.
That's interesting that Sunshine and Alexander Reed Ross are from Brazil and Argentina. I didn't know that. That's interesting. And Mark Bray is from Peru. Like that's really funny. That's like fucking amazing.
Oh, a Syrian philosopher, Arab nationalist, played a significant role in the development of Baathism. See, I'm not a Baathist, so I guess that's why I don't know who my Michel Aflaq is. Thanks for that, though.
All right, next time. Pakistani Anarchy donates another $5 and says, resident of Alaska accused of laundering $1 billion for Iran. Iran loves effing Jewish banking systems. This is why Jews are angry at Iran. Iran Jews the Jews.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the challenge that you know, this goes back to the U.S. dollar. That you need to do all your transactions on the world stage in the SWIFT banking system, which means that New York City Wall Street yids get to see what you're doing, like what you're buying, what you're selling, and so on. You have to go through them. And so if they deplatform your country, which is what they've been doing increasingly so, well, you're shit out of luck. And so they need to be using alternative currencies, like the digital yuan is going to be a big thing. The Russians, I believe, were trying to build an alternative to SWIFT, but that kind of went halfway and they stopped pursuing it. But yeah, this was happening. I mean, that was why they were so mad when the Iranians were taking the oil tankers to Venezuela. It's because the Venezuelans and the Iranians now are bartering. They're not going through SWIFT. So there's no usury, there's no U.S. dollars, nothing involved. And they really don't like that. And no, it's not because, I know so there's some libertarians that say, see, this is the core of everything, it's the petrodollar or whatever. That's not it. The U.S. dollar monopoly or hegemony is a tool to advance Zionism. It's not something that in and of itself is of value. It's just a tool that they use to pressure countries that fall on the wayside of or don't do what they want. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on, this is the last one we got in here. Wheelchair Waffen donates $10 and says, "Hey yo, did you see this jogger eating beans to own the libs?" I don't know. KW Miller, QAnon, running for Congress, eating Goya beans. Boomers didn't get a wall. They're reduced to eating beans to own the libtards. Oh, also, God. Thanks for coming on the People Square, Miriam.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I don't even know what he's talking about. But yeah, that sounds,
you have an interesting,
that sounds like the Republican Party, all right. Yeah. Eating Goya beans to own the libs. Wow.
It's a very exciting country you're from, I have to say.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Well, that's the all bean we got. Wars.
Oh, that's all we got? Mm-hmm. All right, so I'm actually a little tired today, so I'm gonna end this now. Thank you, Miriam, for coming on.
Thanks.
Do you
for
have
having
any
you.
Anything you want to plug? Anything you want out there?
Just follow me on my YouTube channel, Syrian Girl Partisan. You can see the like my videos on Antifa and BLM. There might be a good resource, and I hope we can just talk again. And strategize. Maybe we'll do a Zoom call sometime.
Yeah.
But
no. Sure.
Yeah, but no. Thanks for having me on. It's good to have allies that get it, because you get sick of the left. They fall into the same hole every single time.
Yeah, the left has way too many. Even the honest leftists, they have way too many taboos. Way too many ways of holding back punches when it comes to these issues. And in the case of Israel, in the case of Syria and things like that, if you don't speak in plain language and directly, then you just never get to the bottom of the issue. And that's why the left is kind of, things like the gray zone, they do good work. And as journalists, they do good work, but they can never quite get the full story because of the various taboos that exist in discourse amongst communists and anarchists and tankies even. But it's good to talk to people from different perspectives, and also people that share our perspectives on things. So thank you for that, and play us out, Frankie.
Peace to you, and talk again soon.
Yes, thank you.